Welcome to the E-Commerce Lab by eComsy. This is the place for everything related to Amazon private label and e-commerce. Learn exactly what you need to start or scale your business. Get insights from the top industry experts who will discuss the latest trends and best practices in the world of Amazon. From choosing products and sourcing from a supplier to setting up your Amazon account and marketing your business, you will hear it here. Let's get started. Here is your host, Vincenzo Toscano.
Hello, guys. Welcome to another episode of the E-Commerce Lab by eComsy, the place where I relate to Amazon FBA, private label, and e-commerce. My name is Vincenzo Toscano, founder and CEO of eComsy. And today we bring another special guest. His name is Paul, and he's the co-founder and CEO of Merchant Sprint, which I will say is one of the top solutions out there when it comes to really understanding the analytics and the reporting behind your Amazon business and even e-commerce in general. I was talking to Paul before going live about, you know, how much Amazon sellers struggle to really understand where their money is going, realistically. Some sellers see a huge revenue on their Amazon app and their phone. Then when they dig further, they realize they're actually in red. And the reality is because most of them don't really understand how to properly understand the analytics in terms of the finances. So that's what we're going to be talking about, some of the things that you know you should be aware of, and how actually fees are also changing in the Amazon space, of course, because this is something that a lot of sellers are not aware of, and it's definitely impacting the net profitability. So Paul, welcome to the show once again. How are you doing, my friend?
Yeah, it's great to be here, Vincenzo. I know you're a busy guy, so I thank you for the opportunity. I think our last podcast is well over 2 years ago. So yeah, it's great to be back. Great to be back, man.
I know, it's crazy. I remember back then, things were just kicking it into gear, and seeing how many things have changed in 2 years is definitely crazy, you know? And I'm so thankful to still have you as a partner on my network, because I know you do so many great things in terms of, you know, content and also, you know, your software as well. So it's great to have you. Awesome. So for those that might not know, just a quick intro about, you know, what Merchant Sprint does, who you are, and then, of course, we jump diving into the topic.
Yeah, absolutely. So Merchant Sprint is really, you know, our business is reporting and analytics for Amazon agencies or marketplace agencies, Amazon vendors, and Amazon brands. So we support over 25,000 different sellers through our platform. And really what we try and do is save all of our customers a whole lot of time by bringing all of the analytics together in a very intuitive way without having to do kind of, you know, and get a little bit technical here, but rather having to do data pipelines or Google Data Studio configuration, all that sort of work that there's lots of setup cost involved and ongoing cost. For us, everything just works. It's out of the box. And, you know, we try and cover as many facets of your Amazon business as possible so that you can quickly understand what's working and what's not working, and you get to action as opposed to analysis. That's really kind of, you know, our reason for being.
Awesome, Paul. Thank you so much. And as I said, like, I think this is a must for most Amazon sellers, because it's funny when sometimes I have this conversation, Amazon sellers say, no, I don't need any kind of reporting or insights, because I can just go to my seller central and see that within my transaction view. And man, it's like, that's why so many of them struggle, because if you try to figure out all this on your own or with spreadsheets, trust me, you're going to do a lot of mistakes. And that's what I want to use actually as to open the conversation. Like, from your experience, because I mean, through Merchant Sprint, I'm sure you have started to identify certain trends in terms of where Amazon sellers are struggling. Like, what do you feel is some of the fees that most Amazon sellers oversee that is actually impacting significantly their net profitability?
Yeah. So this year, and I'm you know, very specific in terms of this year, we really see two big trends. I mean, you know, and just for context, of all the e-com platforms out there, because we do profitability across Walmart and other channels too, but for Amazon is by far the most complicated. You know, Amazon, depending on which country you're in, you could be looking at anywhere sort of around 140 different fee types.
It's crazy.
You know, and they're both kind of income and expenses and the like. Now, where we see kind of the two big trends this year One of them is, I think, the more well-known one, which is around advertising, right? Everyone is kind of, I think everyone's feeling the pinch around advertising. Advertising costs are going up. TACOS or ACOS, whoever you like to look at it, it's certainly going up as well. And that's really taking a big hit in terms of the P&L. You know, that comes straight off the bottom line. If you're spending, you know, 50% more on advertising this year, that comes straight out of the bottom line. So I think that's a fairly well-known trend. The other one is perhaps lesser known. If you think about, you know, Amazon and fee types, what's well known is kind of the referral fee and the commission. That's pretty straightforward. But what is becoming a lot more opaque is the all of the different FBA fees, right? So we used to just have per unit fulfillment fees, which essentially meant, hey, Amazon, you know, charges you a fee for every unit you send out of the warehouse. Maybe there's a bit of gift wrapping or whatever that goes with it. But obviously now it's getting more and more complicated, right? So there's fees for, you know, not having enough stock. There's fees for having too much stock. There's fees for, you know, sending things to one warehouse and then letting Amazon distribute it and vice versa. So you think about different combinations. Amazon has really introduced a whole lot of different different fees. I mean, I'm just looking at one of our customer P&Ls here. Obviously, I can't share it, but you know, the new fees I'm seeing to appear that maybe weren't here last year, which is, you know, inbound transportation fees, right?
Yes.
Obviously, storage fees are there, but there's a new line item: long-term storage fees, right? And by the way, it's not just they've appeared, but they've gone up as well. Removal fees, yes. Transportation program fees. I know we've got convenience fees.
And the funny thing of these fees is that sometimes, because they are not significant, you might oversee them. Like maybe it's a few dollars here, a few dollars here and there. But in the the bigger picture, it's a ton of revenue going out of the door, you know?
Absolutely. Right. So to you, like, you know, hey, maybe going from like an average, you know, a cost of like $6 per unit ship, you go to $9. You're like, oh, it's only a couple of dollars. But of course, if you're only selling a product maybe for $15 or $18, you're like, wow, that is your profit
destroyed,
like wiped out.
So
it's really, really tough. And you know, what's really hard is the transparency around this. You know, we've had lots of our customers come to us over the last month. I've particularly noticed this thing this month, which is, we need more breakdown. We need more detail because they're seeing all these charges in their account.
They don't understand.
You know, and it comes as a surprise. You know, I'm sure Amazon has covered their their legal responsibilities, and I'm sure things are communicated. But it's, let me tell you, like, I think 9 out of 10 sellers are quite surprised by the fees that they're facing.
Now, when it comes to this, I feel, of course, it's very important to understand all your expenses in the bigger picture. But what I feel people don't do very often is go even deeper and do this at the SKU level, because sometimes they have identified that the main loser in terms of what attributes to UPNL sometimes as a single SKU compared to your whole catalog.
Yep.
And sometimes you might fall into the trap to think that your whole brand is underperforming when realistically it's only one SKU. But if you don't have a proper P&L structure, like a tool such as Merchant Spring, like, it's very difficult to do this within Amazon itself. So from that perspective, like, what are some of the methodologies you see people doing? It could be even with Merchant Spring to figure out, you know, when deciding when is the right moment or not to kill a SKU, for example, you know?
Look, I mean, let me talk to you about kind of the standard and where kind of the world's moving to, and then I'll give you some sort of watch outs as well. Of course, at a very rudimentary level, what you try and do is you're trying to work, okay, what did I sell things for? At a product level, you can then deduct a referral fee. You can deduct your unit cost. I mean, these things are kind of the easiest things. And then you can get into, okay, what other cost can I attribute down to a product level? And this where things, this is where things typically get a little bit harder. FBA fulfillment is, in terms of the straight fulfillment, is quite easy. But after that, it becomes harder. And it becomes harder, but it doesn't mean the costs aren't true. It just becomes harder to reflect it, which means there is always a risk of thinking that your products are more profitable than they actually are, right? Now, if that's the lowest level of granularity you can go down to, that's okay. But set the bar a little bit higher, right? So instead of looking for break even, you know, set the bar maybe at 10% or 15% profitability and look for relative differences, right? If you've got one product at 5% profitability and the other one at 25%, like go down into the 5% one and focus your energies and efforts there because you're probably losing money there, whereas the 25% one, perhaps less so. But then you get into breaking down further costs. And this is really interesting, right? So you've got some really, particularly on the fulfillment side, you've got some big costs that are sort of product related, but not always attributable back to products. And there's probably three or four I want to just mention. The first one is advertising, right? Mm. Advertising is tricky, right? So as you know, Amazon runs, you can run different types of campaigns, sponsor display, sponsor product, sponsor brand. Now, sponsored brand campaigns, for example, very, very hard to attribute it back down to a product level. You know, if you're just running sponsored products and sponsored product display, you can break it down by product level. It's what we do in Merchant Spring. However, you've got to be still a little bit careful, right? Particularly saying certain categories like fashion, where you may advertise a certain SKU, but you've got huge variety below that. Amazon will attribute all of the cost of that particular, say, sponsored product campaign to that one particular SKU. So that SKU will look super unprofitable, right? It will have a crazy tacos. But the rest of the parent ASIN actually looks quite healthy. So if you're in that sort of category where you've got really deep sort of parent-child variations, you don't want to get too deep into the SKU level profitability. You really want to look at it in a group level, right? In terms of
a hot funnel, essentially a funnel.
Correct. So that's kind of, you know, I guess a limitation of Amazon. But then on the fulfillment side, it gets even more interesting, right? So you've got things like storage fees. Now, Amazon doesn't really break it out by product, but they do give you an estimate, right? So some tools will break it down, storage fees. Same with inbound transportation fees and then long-term storage fees as well. Right. Different tools will do it differently. You know, even things like Amazon's own SKU economics tool, it's a little bit odd because it will break down all of the inbound. If you look at the P&L, it will break down the inbound costs down to product, but not the storage cost, which is kind of weird because typically the storage cost is much larger than the inbound cost, right? I think this is an evolving space. I think but when we get to, say, the end of this year, I think a lot of tools, us included, will have full SKU level profitability and we'll try and break down as much of the costs down to a product level, including things like reimbursements and returns and all that. But right now, it feels like everyone is in a transition space. So be very careful with that.
And you mentioned there's something very interesting, which I want to make a quick parenthesis on the first scenario, which is when you have a product that essentially is a lead loser of a brand. It brings all the traffic, but it's not the one that converts. It's the one that allows people to discover your brand and buy your other catalogs. And the reason why this is super interesting is because we started using Amazon Marketing Cloud for this. And now you're able to identify those touch points, right? Which before it was pretty much impossible. And that happens a lot. So for those watching and hearing this, like, be mindful of that, because I remember a brand that they removed an ASIN that was crazy, like crazy tacos and echoes, because they were never profitable. And unfortunately, after doing that, the revenue had a huge dip because that ASIN was the one bringing all the awareness. So you have to be very careful. And it's good that you made a highlight on that. And on the second part, to conclude as well, you mentioned finding economics at the SKU level is difficult. But for those watching and hearing this episode right now, let's say somebody maybe don't have a tool right now and they're really struggling to figure out this cost. Do you recommend maybe just creating an average, like taking the total cost and divide it among your SKUs? Or what is some, I know it's not accurate, but at least so you have some understanding, like what do you recommend sellers to do in this case?
Are you talking about your own unit cost?
Exactly. Not the unit cost, but the cost involved with the Amazon inbound storage and everything. Like, if you struggle to do at the SKU level, is there some advice or tip you recommend to come up with a baseline for your product?
Yeah, sure. I think what's really useful is just understand a little bit of how roughly what are the drivers of cost, right? Mm-hmm. So referral fees or commissions in layman speak, it's always a percentage, right? So you can do it. If you're building a quick model, it's typically based on percentage. So you can look at the referral piece for your category, you can work it out. It's really easy, I don't know, 15%, whatever it might be, depending on the category. When it comes to fulfillment, never use a percentage, right? Because you'll invariably get it wrong. Fulfillment is always based on pretty much on a unit basis, right? Exactly. So it's a variable that has a different driver. So for fulfillment, I would always do it on a per unit basis, right? Okay. Now, if it's something reasonable, you know, I don't think I've got any benchmarks to hand here, but you know, depending on the category, it might be $6 a unit that you ship. Right.
Yeah. I guess what I'm sure some people might have as a question is like, we know the referral fee is 15% and FBA fee sometimes is another 10-15% on top of that. But let's say for the fees we are talking, the inbound and all of that, is there maybe a baseline that you might say, okay, always consider 3% of cost of sale, plus or minus? You see what I mean? Is there some bandwidth you have figured out? If not, I'm just curious.
Actually, we have not, because it really depends on the big driver of it is actually your average sale price, right? Mm-hmm. So if your average sale, what's interesting, it's, you know, Amazon doesn't care how much you sell things for based, you know, in terms of determining the shipping cost, right? Yeah, so it could be exactly the same cost shipping a $50 product or a $20 product. And that's where, or one is super profitable and the other is not. So it's really hard to get a percentage right.
Interesting.
I would flip it on its head, right?
Yeah.
And say, if you're selling a product that, say, let's talk the US, for example, that is below 25, that you're selling at an average price of $25 or less, and it's like a normal size product, or not, it's not like a greeting card, a Hallmark greeting card that you can sell for 20 bucks and weighs nothing. It's like a normal size product, like a water bottle or whatever. Be very careful, because you're probably marginally profitable. Like, you're probably spending $10 a unit on FBA fees and everything else, right? And then if you subtract your costs plus your advertising costs, and then you think about, well, this is not really a repeatable product. I'm not getting like a lifetime value here.
If you're going to make $2 per sale, what's the point? Yeah.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah,
that's it.
So, awesome. Now, in terms of fees as well, another thing I wanted to ask you, like, how, from your experience, this might have an impact in terms of seasonality, because we know seasonality can also play a role here, right? Especially when you try to come up with a cash flow plan for your brand, it could be complex to figure out, you know, how fees fluctuate across the year, because they do in terms of storage and all of that. So do you have some advice in there as well? Like, what do you usually see sellers doing to mitigate this fluctuation of fees? Because sometimes it can be significant. And if your cash flow is not adjusted to that, you might go easily from green numbers to red numbers, you know? So,
Yeah. I think what I'm seeing more and more every year is some really explicit consideration on whether to participate in things like Prime Day or Black Friday, right? So traditionally, I mean, in Q4, every seller gets that letter from Amazon, right? Saying it's peak trading, fees are going up. You know, in a way that makes sense, because Amazon is pushing a lot more volume through their warehouse. They want to make sure that, you know, the working capital in those warehouses,
or at least
the volume of stock is optimized, right? You know, I don't think it's necessarily they don't want to grab money off you. They just want to disincentivize you to take slow-moving stock out of the warehouse, right?
Yeah.
So they can free up capacity to drive that. But, you know, obviously, the costs go up. Then, of course, you see there's big discounting going on during these events as well. And then, generally speaking, there is a big cost associated with like, the wave, the stock wave, right? You know, you're probably spending more on transport to getting onto Amazon, getting the right time slot in, and not having to pay like penalty fees and all these things is harder and harder, and it has a massive working capital drain on your you know, your own balance sheet. So I see more and more sellers, but also vendors actually sort of say, look, actually we're just gonna play it safe, or pass, or let's not go crazy and let's not beat our chest because we want to show, you know, we want to post some sort of chart on LinkedIn that says 200%.
The idea $1 million, but the profit was $10,000.
What is, by the way, what is, I mean, this is a little bit deeper. What is really interesting, these are some of the work we're doing with some of our clients now around customer lifetime value, right? Yeah. What is really interesting is to go back, because we all kind of invest, right, in terms of Prime Day and Black Friday. What's really interesting, go back, say, last year, 11th and 12th of July. Look at the cohort of customers that you sold to, and particularly the ones that became new customers to your brand, right? Mm-hmm. Look at that cohort. Try and drill down, you know, into those days and say, what's happened to them? Are those customers, the lifetime value of those customers, is it the same? Mm-hmm. Is it more? And what are the specific products that turn them into a good, you know, repeat customer that drove them a disproportionately high lifetime value? So, because you may just find that, like, of the hundreds of products that you sold, of all that work you did, maybe there was just a handful that actually made the difference, right?
Yes, the 80-20 rule, essentially. Yeah.
Correct. Although, you know, in e-commerce, sometimes it's more like the 5-95 rule, right? It's kind of more granular.
In fact, we do that all the time with brand analytics, because with brand analytics, you can go back in time and we see, you know, what competitors did during a specific period of time, how the keyword behaved, all of that. And it's a good indicator if sometimes it's worth it or not to replicate the same the coming year. You mentioned something, lifetime value. And I have to be honest with you. I feel that's the direction Amazon is going, because the way how expensive it's getting to have customer acquisition, the days of only focusing on tacos and ACOs, I feel is becoming, unfortunately, the wrong way of seeing your business, because sometimes tacos and ACOs is just a top of the surface metric. It could be just how much it costs you to actually acquire the client. But if you have like a supplement brand or typical brand that has accessories around your ecosystem, where you actually make the money is in the lifetime value. And we actually saw in the US how Amazon just released this new dashboard called the customer loyalty one, which now shows you how the lifetime value is changing period after time, the repeat purchase behavior, and new to brands metrics. So I feel now Amazon is going more the direction of giving us metrics that have to do with actually running a proper brand, that focusing only flipping products like the old private label, which is just get the product from China, flip it, and make some quick cash. So being said that, like, how do you feel also that is going to affect the way we see the analytics and do reporting on Amazon? Because I feel lifetime value as of now is very difficult to figure out on your own, because Amazon doesn't really break down this figure for you. You have to do some crazy macros and everything. So what's your take on that?
Well, first of all, I've got good news coming for you, because we'll...
Okay, I like that.
In a few days, we're switching it on for not just Amazon, but actually for Walmart and all the other channels we provide analytics for, which is going to be great. I think it's definitely going there. So my cynical view here, right? Let me give you two different perspectives. My cynical view is everyone's complaining to Amazon that advertising costs are going up. And you know, by repositioning the whole argument as a lifetime value thing, right? Saying, don't look at the first sale, look at the lifetime value of the customer, is a way for Amazon to justify you to spend even more advertising dollars, right?
Yeah.
It's 50% tacos, it's not so bad, because the customer's
going to buy. You're going to make money in 10 years.
So in a way, you know, and there's a reason why Amazon is building these tools. They are laying they're positioning the argument for you to spend more on advertising dollars. That's the kind of cynical view. The kind of the glass half full view is, actually, they're kind of right. Yeah. I think in the past, we've made the wrong decisions by going, well, I mean, we're doing this, we're having a look at, you know, one of our customers, which is a well-known beauty brand in the US, right? Their tacos is running pretty high, probably 50, 60%. Mm-hmm. And on that first purchase, they're losing money, right?
Yeah.
But we know that every customer comes back at least 5 times over a period of 2 years, right? Exactly. And these are $40, $50 products. So the lifetime value of these customers is sitting close to the $200.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. And if you then look at, well, 50% of 40, so we spend $20 per customer to then acquire $200 of revenue.
It's worth it,
It's as a true tacos, 10% doesn't look so bad, right? So, you know, I think it definitely makes sense in certain categories where there's repeat purchases. But hey, if you're selling furniture, right, or washing machines or something where the concept of repeat purchase really is nonsense, right? You know, don't fall into the trap of, you know, being told by your agency that, you know, don't worry about the 50% tacos, you know, it's the lifetime value, right?
They're going to buy another fridge in 15 years, so let's wait.
Yeah. If they have to buy another fridge in like 2 years' time, they probably won't buy your fridge, right?
That's correct. That's very good, very good. Now, to start concluding, I will say, because it's a question I get all the time as well, when it comes to really, you know, auditing your business to see how it's going on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis. There are so many KPIs nowadays, and it's difficult. You know, you get sometimes confused about, is my business growing? Is my business shrinking? And we already been mentioning a couple of them as an example. But given that at Merchant Speed, you guys offer so many insights for businesses, have you identified a high level? What are some of the KPIs, or maybe besides KPIs, methodologies you should be implementing on a weekly basis or monthly basis to make sure that you're going the right direction in terms of maybe not overpaying certain things, or you're bringing your business not shrinking, it's expanding? Is there some tips you can give to start concluding?
Yeah, sure. I'm really kind of analytical guy, so I like to sort of start really at the top, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, a healthy business is a business that exhibits two things in my mind. It's growing top line sales, and its profit line is expanding, right? Mm-hmm. So really, so the two things I'm looking at is, so let's say, you know, we've just finished May, obviously. I'll be looking at May versus, I like to look year on year as opposed to, you know, May versus the prior year, because, you know, I'd like to strip out seasonality. But of course, you know, looking at things different ways is always good, but very simplicity, I like to look year on year. I like to look May on May. I look at, is my sales grown? Has my profit expanded, right? Mm-hmm. And I want to drill down to each of those. So if my sales hasn't grown, or hasn't grown to the extent that I would have liked, then I'd like to drill down. And Amazon is a SKU by SKU proposition, or an ASIN by ASIN proposition, right? Because the basket is so small. So then I would like to look at, okay, where did I get this? Where did the sales volume come out of? So which of my ASINs were really underperforming, right?
Yeah.
Second step. The third step, I'm then going to, okay, is this a traffic issue, right? Fewer people landing on the page, or is this a conversion issue, right? And then from there, you can go, right, is the traffic organic or paid, or is it a, you know, if it's a conversion issue, is it a buy box issue or, you know, an on-page conversion issue? So you can sort of just methodically dissect it down. Start at the top, sales, traffic, conversion, and work your way down. Very quickly, you'll be able to get to, right, there's a red flag here, and it's not working. And therefore, the action is, okay, I need to revise my campaign, or, I've noticed that Amazon has reclassified my product into the wrong browse node. And all of a sudden, I've noticed that my BSR that used to be 10, I'm now sitting in a different category, and it's like 600, you know, like things like that. But then, of course, sales is in a way just a vanity metric, right? The only reason we care about sales is because if the sales are good and the profit holds, we're going to get more money in our bank account. So then the second bit, to your point, is I like to look at the full P&L this year versus the P&L last year, and at least at a basic level go, right, if my margin went down, where did it come from? Oh, my returns have gone up. Okay, that's a problem. I need to look down. Oh, or maybe my average price point is a little bit less, right, than last year. Or, you know, right now you'll definitely see fulfillment fees up there. So I'd like to sort of look at it at a macro level, and then I'll tackle each of them individually, right, which is, okay, at a product by product level, like we were saying before, you know, where are the opportunities and where can I improve? Tackle it systematically.
Cool. Thank you, Paul. I mean, I think this conversation has been very insightful even for me. So I appreciate your time. And for those that might, you know, really learn more about yourself and Merchant Spring, because at the end of the day, all these things we've been talking about, you know, tools such as Merchant Spring can make it so much easier for you. So tell us a little bit about that. Yeah.
So if anyone's listening or viewing this episode, and want to get in touch, I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. So just drop me a message. Happy to chat to you there. Or head to our website. You can just book a demo, right? And it's just three of us, right? We're not a massive company. We've got about 16, 17 staff at the moment. Most of them are engineers. So, you know, there's a bit of a family feel. You'll get to talk to me or some of my colleagues that would love to show you kind of how Merchant Spring can help you and your business and help you grow in a profitable way.
Awesome, Paul. So thank you so much. And for everybody watching and listening to this, I'm going to put all the information down in the notes. Other than that, Paul, I appreciate your time and I can't wait to meet you soon at some of the upcoming events. Yeah, it's been a pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Vincenzo. Appreciate it. Take care.
Bye-bye. See ya. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to The E-Commerce Lab by eComsy. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. While you are at it, we would appreciate it if you could leave an honest rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. That will make it easier for others to find out about the show and benefit from it. Want more? Visit our website at www.ecomsy.com, where you can get your first consultation for free. Or find us on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn at ecomsy.